Okay, so like I said, so on this website, Olamot, since you guys had asked me about halacha in space, so I found that they had a whole thing called Kiyum Mitzvot Bechalal, right, keeping mitzvot in space. It was specifically an issue that was dedicated to Ilan Ramon. Are you guys too young to remember this? You know who he is, okay. I think I was in high school when it happened. But when he went up to space before the tragic accident, he had asked several rabbis how to keep halacha, because he wasn't himself dati, but he felt that it was very important if he represented the state of Israel, if he represented the Jewish people, that he should keep mitzvot in space. And therefore he asked poskim, how exactly do you do this? And so the poskim responded to him. There had been an earlier round of tshuvot on the issue when man first went on the moon, but then it was theoretical, right? No one was asking. Neil Armstrong wasn't asking, do I have to keep halacha on the moon? But the poskim began talking about it then, but it became practical when Ilan Ramon asked, what exactly do you do? So there are many questions that you could ask, so let's try to divide them. The first question that the poskim asked, which was the most sort of fundamental and interesting and philosophical, was, are you obligated in any mitzvot once you leave the world? Right? Are mitzvot geographic dependent in the sense that they are only obligatory when you're on Earth? That was the first question. What? That is indeed one of the examples they give, right? Not, you know, sort of tongue-in-cheek there, but their argument is, we know there are mitzvot that are geographic in nature, normally limited to Israel, not to Earth, but the question is, all of Torah like that? That was question one that they asked. The second question that came up, and this is the most complicated, obviously, are all the questions that relate to mitzvot atliyot bizman, time-bound mitzvot. So, correct, because you're, I think it was seven times a day or something like that, he was going around the earth or whatever it is. So, how do you keep Shabbat? How do you keep Yom Tov? So, Zmanim divided. There's the Shabbos question, which is, when do you keep Shabbat, right? Do you keep it every
20 minutes.
Do you keep it like every, if you go around seven times a day, so like every, whatever it was, once a day, or oh no, it was more than that. Whatever it was. Well, it's in here, the exact, 16 times. He would go around 16 times, so basically twice or more a day does he keep Shabbos for the amount of time that it takes him to go around the earth once, every seventh round. Does he keep it every 144 hours? He'll keep for the next 24, and then, you know, you'll get, you know, 1/7 of the 168 hours, things like that. Does he have to keep Yom Tov, right? If you go around 16 times a day, so does that mean you've gone through 6 months halachically in, you know, whatever, in like 12 days or so? So then you're bound to hit Pesach, and then you have to sell your chametz, and, you know, do you have to fast in Yom Kippur, and all related issues that come there. So that was one set of zmanim question. The other set of zmanim question were, what about daily chiyuvim? So let's say you have to say Shema twice a day. So does that mean you're going around 16 times? That means you have to say Kriyat Shema 32 times in every 24-hour period. You mean you have to put your tefillin on, take them off, put them on, take them off, put them on, take them off, put them on, take them off. Tzitzis, and the like. For the Zmanim questions, the poskim also drew inspiration, shall I say, from, there are cases in which similar Zmanim questions are asked on Earth. So if you travel to certain parts of the world that are very, very north, you will get into similar questions. The sun won't rise for 6 months a year. You get this in certain parts of Canada. There was a doctor in Toronto who would learn with us sometimes in the Kollel, who would spend a few weeks, it was 2 weeks every 6 weeks or something. He would fly up to Nunavut to treat the indigenous nations, and Nunavut is like, the parts of Nunavut he would go to were like north of the North Pole. So you have real, right? So he would only go like in the middle of the week to avoid Shabbos problems. I had a friend who asked me a few months ago how to keep Shabbos in the northern parts of Norway, where you have similar ones. So there is issues like that. Another issue that the Poskim dealt with was, is it mutter to travel knowing that you might have to violate Shabbos, however you define Shabbos, once you're up in heaven. In general, right, you're not allowed to put yourself in a situation of violating Shabbos. Another shayla that was asked was Kiddush Levana, right? Normally we say the bracha of Kiddush Levana when you see the moon. Is there a bracha that you say when you are on the moon? Some of these shaylas were more practical than others. They had a problem because of the way you eat, because of gravity, so you only drink through straws. Can you make Kiddush on something that you drink through a straw? This was a shayla that Ilan Ramon asked them. And then people ask Kashkafi questions. So these were the questions that they asked. So we're not going to get to all of them, so I just figured I'll give you the whole packet. And like I said, the nice thing about these packets are that they really are accessible. You can go online and get the outline if you want. But in the meantime, as you can see, right, they have the sources, but they don't just like leave you. They underline the key lines. They have on the important lines, not just the really important lines, they have little hands, you know, little arrows pointing, look here, read that line. So if you want the main point, you just follow the little hands. In general, this is really, if they have anything on a topic that you're interested in, it is it's a very helpful website to go to. So let's start with the first sort of big question, and then maybe we'll break up into Chavrusa for the second one. The first question, what do you think? Are you obligated in mitzvot, right? You go to, I can't believe I'm giving share on this, but okay, I found it fascinating once I actually researched it, so thank you for making me research it. I did find it fascinating. Yes. Yes, but I think Summer asked me, but I don't know if she's here.
I'll send my notes to her.
Yeah, and I recorded it also, so. But someone definitely asked. Though, like I said, it does have practical relevance, especially the Zmanim questions, because of the certain similarities to the questions in the north, the very northern parts of the world. But let's deal with question one, right? Are mitzvot obligatory when you leave planet Earth? So what do you think?
No.
Good. Why no? Good. So you could just say, look, the Torah is given, Hashem aretz m'lo aretz, natan livnei Adam, the place of people is on the world. Once you enter heaven, you're in God's domain or something like that, and you're not chayev in mitzvot. Yeah.
God is the master of the universe, and this is a moral system that God is giving to us to live lives, then those lives can be lived on Earth. And me in space isn't God's domain, because God isn't occupying any specific physical space.
Right, so you could definitely say, yeah. Right, so you could definitely say, yeah, right? Right, it's... I like the formulation, right? This is God. God is the master of the universe. This is the moral code for the universe, right? What does this mean, right? He's not... So this was already asked the first time around. The first time around when people went to space. And there was an article, and again, the whole article is actually fascinating. I went and I read the whole article, but there was only a limited number of sources I could actually give you. I already gave you more than I really should. But if you turn to page 10 here, okay? So turn to page 10. So the first time this was asked, there was a few articles published in the journal Noam, volume 13. So if you look at the top on the left, the article by Harav Ben Sion Firer. So he wrote, he was the first one to weigh in. And he says, Chiyuv o patur b'kiyum ha-mitzvot al hayareach. Right? Are you obligated in mitzvot in heaven? So he says, B'yameinu eile, acharei she'etzliach adam la'atzig kafraglo al hayareach. In our times, now that people have successfully put their feet on the moon, shuv ein lo agim lef sharut litzor sham tanaim l'chaye. No, right, so now people are thinking about living on the moon, setting up civilization on the moon. maybe one day, it's no longer crazy for us to ask this question. So are you obligated in mitzvot? So he says, v'im tomar, so his answer. He suggests that the answer is no, that you are in fact exempt from mitzvot. So he brings several proofs for this. One is that the Gemara, in Agadata you might have heard before, the Agadata tells us that when Moshe Rabbeinu went to take the Torah from Shamayim, the Malachim say, what is a Yilud Enosh doing among us to try to take the Torah? And then you go through the whole dialogue, and he convinces the angels that the Torah is for mankind who lives on earth and has, you know, have parents and everything, and not the angels who live in heaven. So he says, in that Gemara, right, that it seems like a human being's place is on earth, and Moshe's argument was therefore the Torah belongs on earth and not in heaven. This is an agadic one. I'm not fully convinced by this either. His main halachic argument, though, goes as follows. If you continue, he says, "V'im tomar, im ein makom ayarech l'chol ha-mitzvot, harei yish makom l'mektatan, v'ein t'chayevna b'nei adam she'agiyu l'sham." He said, look, many mitzvot, there's no reason to assume you can't keep them on the moon. But there are certain mitzvot where it really would be very hard to keep on the moon. Mitzvot ha-tluyot ba'aretz, obviously you're not in Israel, mitzvot ha-tluyot bizman, is very complicated, if they apply at all, and if so, how? Yeah. Well, that's going to be the hardest question. We're going to get there.
If you're on the moon, you can't, like, see the moon.
I know. We're going to get to that. That's going to be the hardest question. But let's start with this overarching, which is the more theoretical. So he says, look, he has this wild chiddush, and he says the following. Yesh lomar, ein Torah l'chatzain. He has this chiddush, that maybe the Torah is an all-or-nothing system.
Is or isn't?
Is. And therefore, ki darash rab simloi sheish meot u'shloshes rei mitzvot nemru lo Moshe. Because the phrase that we have in the Gemara is that Rav Simloi said there are 613 mitzvot that Hashem got, that Hashem gave to Moshe. Taryag mitzvot elu hein shlemut achat. They're one perfected unit. Pachod mi mispar hazeh o yoter mimena einene kvar Torah. More or less would not be the Torah. Hence, we have a prohibition in the Torah. Lo tosef alav, lo tigram mimenu, don't add, don't subtract. Ki az eina Torah Torah. And therefore we have halachot that a heretic who rejects a single mitzvah, not a heretic, a rebel against the Torah, who is trying to anger God and reject just one mitzvah, but categorically reject it, not just I'm weak, you know, we're all human, but I categorically reject a single mitzvah, we consider him, for halachic purposes, like an idolater. Kimisha eino modeh b'mitzvah achat, because one who doesn't acknowledge the existence of one mitzvah, kamo mitkachesh l'chol Torah kula, as if he contradicts the entire Torah, ke'ein Torah ela b'shleimuta, the Torah is only in its completeness. Kishein yishleima, me'abedet hi et kol erkah, and when it's not complete, it loses its entire value. And therefore he suggests that maybe the mitzvot are just not obligatory at all, because it's an all or nothing system. Now obviously he then realizes in the next paragraph, Amnam gamal haaretz lo kol mekod shavim. What are you talking about? So outside of Israel, right, you can't keep all the mitzvot, so you shouldn't be obligated. V'yesh mekomot mitzvot atzmudot l'makomot misyamot. V'alpobchin eina roim et ha-Torah ki bilti shleima ba'otam mekomot b'hem eina mitzvot eila noeget. Now, this happens to not fully be true, right? The Ramban does seem to say in certain places that outside of Israel, you have to keep the Torah, but it's only practice. It doesn't really count. It only counts in Israel, so you could go in that direction. But even within that, he says certain mitzvot only apply in Yerushalayim, right? And everyone agrees that the mitzvot apply in Israel. And he says, at any rate, all of the earth is one realm. And even though it's true that not all the mitzvot apply to every person, right? Certain mitzvot only apply to men, certain only apply to women, certainly only apply to Kohanim, etc. Still, when you're on earth, so the earth is one place, people are one unit, fine. And therefore, the Torah is at least complete in theory. But when you go to the moon, Maybe you would argue you're in a different place and certain mitzvot are categorically excluded. There's no one who could keep them. And therefore, he suggested his last line, where it's underlined, Torah she'en bat teriyag mitzvot eina kayemet. So maybe a Torah that cannot be completed, all 613, it doesn't exist at all. And at the end of the article, he says that I am not sure. This is my first attempt, my machshava rishona. If you look now at the bottom half of the page on the left side, Rav Menachem Mendel Kasher responded. Rav Menachem Mendel Kasher wrote, you know the Torah Shlema? Ever seen Torah Shlema? It's like this massive encyclopedic work on every pasuk until he died, on with like every midrash with commentary and. No, it's I don't see a copy here, but it's this massive, massive work. Anyways, he was living 20th century in the latter half of his life, anyways, in America. And he writes as follows. He writes a little kuntres called Ha'adam al Hayareach, The Man on the Moon. You can go online. It's on Hebrew books. You can see the whole thing. It's a combination of Ashkafic articles, Halachic articles.
Who is this?
Rav Menachem Mendel Kasher. So he writes on the bottom half of the page here on 10, Ha'adam al Yareach, Lefi ani yadati, Barur b'lishum safek, Shehagdara shel halacha hi shechiyuv l'kayim mitzvot ha-Torah hi chovet gavra. He said, this is ridiculous. It is obvious to me that the mitzvot are what we call chiyuve gavra. They are obligations that devolve on people, wherever you may be. V'kol bar Yisrael chayav l'kayim Torah b'kol makom. And every person, every Jew must keep the Torah wherever you are. B'kol makom shu chai, wherever you live. B'shamayim imal al ha-levana. I don't care if it's in heaven, on the moon. Or b'mayim mitach al-aretz, or you know, you go 20,000 leagues under the sea. B'tzir ha-tzvoni, b'tzir ha-dromi, the northern tip of the world or the southern. Shabo chelek me'ashana kulo or choshech, where there's no light or no dark. Bo b'aviron or on a plain. Kol zman shu chai. As long as you're alive and you can keep the Torah, you are obligated to keep all the mitzvot, and if you are unable to, so then you're exempt. But it's not that categorically you're removed. But what you can't, or you're not prevented from keeping, you must keep, you must fulfill. There is no possible way to argue. There is no argument that you are exempt ever, anywhere, from all of mitzvot. I am shocked. How could anyone even suggest such a shocking thing? That there should be a Jew, a born Jew, right? How did he not ask? Where did the Jew's sanctity go, etc.? And then if you look at the bottom, at the underlined part, he says, me'olam lo ala al hadad. It never entered anybody's mind. Shegam ba'olamenu anu, tihye efsharut shebnei adam yasu, it can't be that now that we're talking about setting up civilization on the moon, that we could say that you'd be exempt, have a society exempt of mitzvot. And therefore he says, the author, meaning Rav Fuhrer himself, said this was only his first thoughts. I hope by the time he gets to a second round of thoughts on this, that he decides differently.
With and
what? That first article we just read, Rafir.
Yeah, so he's like kind of like
yeah, he's responding, right? He's very, very angry and he's responding to this article. So the majority of the postgame, not surprisingly, take the second view and say that at least as a category, mitzvot or chayav. Now, if you go through the rest of his piece, right, he goes on. He said, what does it mean you're exempt from mitzvot? You're exempt from the lavim also, from the negatives. So you can murder when you're on the moon. You can steal. I mean, right, it's very, very implausible to say that, well, it's all or nothing. I mean, really, now there's it's complete lawlessness once you leave Earth. That would be extremely, extremely strange.
Also, I just don't agree with the way he makes most of his arguments.
Which one?
The first.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you. I think the first one, it's a... Look, to be fair, he was being asked to Shaila that presumably... Like, for us, the fact that people go to space is something we're at least used to. For the when it first happened, people were completely thrown and they were grappling with it. So if you have weird positions that come up, it's not crazy. I agree that it's very, very, very strange. Now, you find other surprising positions, which I don't want to dwell into, but if you look, for example, on the right-hand side here on page 10, there was another sort of meta-argument that was made. This is in the Sefer Sham Derech, or Sham Derech. And he writes as follows. He said, okay, is it possible, right, forget mitzvah for a moment, is it possible that the very things that we take for granted that are part of human life, they might not apply in the same way on the moon? And this is his argument specifically. He says, what?
Top right?
Yeah, the top right. He says, look, when mankind is on Earth, why is it that we are allowed to do anything to the world? Why is it that we can change it, build on it, plant on it? Why are we allowed to do that, right? Isn't that theologically problematic? We are human beings. God is in control of the universe. Why are we allowed to change anything? I'm not sure I love the question, but he points to the Ramban, who says that why are we allowed to build and develop and plant? Because in Parshat Bereishit, what did God say? Go, reprovu mulur aretz v'chiv shua. Go, conquer the earth, redu v'gadayam. Meaning, the reason we're allowed to is because God said, go do it. Meaning, theoretically, you're right. The world is God, so we shouldn't be allowed to build and control it, etc. But if God says you can do it, so then you can do it. But he says, if that's the case, what does that sound like? That sounds like you need a specific permission from God to go and develop the world. But if you take that seriously and literally, which I'm not sure you should, but he wants to, he says, therefore, maybe the moon, space, is a place where God did not give us permission or the mandate to build it up and civilize it and colonize it. And therefore, he says, and if you look in the middle, me'etah yesh ladun, the underlined part, like three paragraphs in, yesh ladun im rashut shenitna levnei adam umalu et ha'aretz v'chiv shua. It could be that this permission that was given to mankind to fill the world and conquer it, you could say, he said, on the one hand, you could say that when God said, conquer the world, it meant the universe, or the universe is yours. Or maybe it meant very specifically that God said, you are allowed to conquer earth. And therefore, maybe you could visit the moon, but you wouldn't be allowed to build. You couldn't use stones. And he then concludes in the next paragraph that in general, the Chama Levana, the moon and the sun are considered part of heaven. The Yotze Lefizesh Adama Magiel Arech in Rashut Klal Lasot Sham is a Davar Shu Gadol Kekatan. And therefore, he contends that you're not allowed to build on the moon or in space because God has not given us control over it. Right? Forget mitzvot for a moment, but even the very things that we just take as secular and mundane. Are things that were mandated by God, and maybe they're not in space, and they are not in our tchum. So again, you have at this like first round, you have very interesting positions that are emerging about the totality of mitzvah, or even the totality of human endeavor. Okay, but let's move to go to both. You can choose three questions. Go. Okay.
So first he says, like, maybe like, what God gave us was the universe, and then he says, or maybe here. And then he just, like, concludes. But, like, how did he come to
So he concludes because he says, you see that in halacha, In general, the sun and the moon are not considered part of Earth, right? We don't have an expansive notion. They're considered part of Shamayim, and therefore, that's his conclusion. Again, you could argue on this easily. What?
Yeah.
Oh, so he quotes it from. If you look at the paragraph I skipped, he says, "Medivrei Chazal Shevi Ramban Breishit Bara Elokim Hashamayim Ved Aretz," because. In the midrash it says that there's shamayim and aretz. At a shamayim, the midrash defines the rabot chama ulevana, that the sun and the moon are part of the category of shamayim and not aretz. And therefore, he says if the pasuk says v'chiv shuha on the land, right, rudu v'gad hayam over shamayim v'chol chayit armes ala aretz, that shows you that these are outside of his sphere. Again, I don't know if I'm convinced by this, but this is his argument. Yeah. So the first round are written like right after the man went on the moon. Most of the things we're going to see here were written, a lot of the more practical tshuvot about times were written to Ilan Ramon. So they were written, like these were actual tshuvot, not like theoretical articles. There was the rabbi who was actually asked by Ilan Ramon, what should I do, right? And that was, right, a lot of what you have here are the actual tshuvot that were written to respond to Ilan Ramon. Not what we've seen so far, but the most of what is in this packet. Again, I'm not planning on reading all of it. I just gave you all of it, and now you can read it on your own time. But that's most of what's being dealt with here. Okay, that's sort of the more theoretical. But let's So it sounds like you can explore it, right? He says you can explore it, but you can't do anything there. I can't build. I guess not. I'm not really sure. I don't even know who this person is. Like I said, they did a very nice job at collecting these sources. I really don't know. I'll be honest. I find this type of argumentation very strange. It very like literalist reads of Midrashim, and you know. I don't remember who said it, but not everything's here, but another question I'll say outside that some people asked that bothered them was, how do we say Kiddush Levana at all nowadays, or at least part of it, right? In Kiddush Levana we say, Kishem Kani Roke Kenechdech Veni Yachol and Goabach, right? Just, I dance here and I can't touch the moon, so too my enemies won't be able to touch me, right? So people started panicking. Well, now we can touch the moon, right? What do you do? Now, this is not really a big deal. The halachic part is just the bracha. But a lot of the mafreshim said, a lot of the poskim said, what are you talking about? This is not like, right? Like, you normally can't just touch the moon, right? Like, it's still, there are literalist reads here. I'm never quite convinced by them. I agree. I don't know. I'm baffled by this. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if this is like accurate, but when you're on the moon, like, does the Earth, like from your perspective, go through periods of like waxing and waning?
On the moon, maybe. I'm not. Well, like not waxing and waning, meaning you're. If you're not on the dark side of the moon, then no, I guess not, because you will see different parts of the Earth, presumably, but it doesn't whack. It's not the way it would in the moon. No, okay. Not that way. Right? No. Okay. Like I said, this was the much more theoretical. But what was the real halachic question? The one that was the hardest, as I said, were the zmanim questions. Right, the zmanim questions. Right, these were the ones that were really hardcore halachic questions that Ilan Ramon had to face. Which was okay. I go to space and I go around the Earth 16 times a day. So what do I do? Right. Well, I want to keep Shabbos. So what do I do? So what are the possibilities? And then maybe we'll look at the sources inside or break into covers. But first, let's outline the theoretical possibilities. Let's start with Shabbos. Right. Theoretical possibilities. When would you say that someone should keep Shabbos? He's on the moon, he's in space, right? He's circling the Earth in a spaceship, right? When should he keep Shabbos? So what are the theoretical possibilities?
Like, I mean, you brought up a couple.
Oh, good. So let's spell them out.
Just like if he's going around a bunch of times, then each of those times is a day.
Good. So possibility one is to say, look, we define day as the Earth's rotation. Here, you're going around the Earth, so it should be just like when the Earth goes around its axis, that's a day. If you go around the Earth, that's a day. And therefore, if he goes around 16 times, so you just divide
16.
Right? You divide it, and he keeps Shabbos every... Right? You figure every seventh time he goes around the world, he keeps Shabbos. And they got to figure out, okay, you start, presumably, when you leave Earth. So if it's a Wednesday, so then whatever, right? Three rotations and, you know... Whatever you would do, or something like that. That's one possibility. What's another possibility?
He should keep Shabbat the same day as people on Earth.
Right, so you should keep it the same as people on Earth, and then you got to figure out which place. Do you keep it based on where you left? Do you keep it based on where you identify having as living, right? Which was Ilan Ramon's preference, was that he wanted to keep Shabbos with the time that they would in Israel, even though he was obviously not leaving from Israel, but that was his preference. So that's another possibility.
That's what he did, right? He kept time.
What? I mean,
he kept Shabbat on Israel time.
Well, he died.
He died.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what he was planning on doing.
Yeah, that's what he was planning on doing. That's why this was dedicated in his memory, right? These are the Shilohs that were asked for him.
He's in the Challenger, right?
What?
He's in the Challenger?
I think that's right. Yeah. I think that's right.
That's the one that exploded on the way up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So this did not, unfortunately, become relevant. So that's another possibility. What's the third possibility?
He does not keep Shabbat.
Correct. Another possibility, he doesn't keep Shabbos at all. Right? That no, not all mitzvot are cease to be relevant, but yes, time-bound mitzvot cease to be relevant. A re-entry? So then I guess that is what he did then. Then is good he did. Then that is what he did.
Re-entry?
Yeah,
because I remember watching a video that was like...
So re-entry?
It was like him radioing into like a radio station and like talking to them for a few minutes.
Okay, so it was re-entry. Okay. But so that's a third possibility, right? Is that he doesn't have to keep Shabbos at all. The time-bound mitzvot do cease to be relevant. Now... Again, as I said, if you think that it's one thing to say you should keep Shabbos every seventh rotation around the Earth, if you carry that to its logical extreme with the rest of the calendar, it'd be very, very odd, right? Because that means that you would rush through, a year in 1/16th of the time, which is very strange, since a year seems not to be defined by the rotation of the Earth on its axis, but the Earth going around the sun. So it would be very strange to say that you would speed up your days, and then that would have implications for the calendar writ large, because that already seems very odd. The year is a very precise thing in that sense, which is one of the complicating factors. And like I said, the similar questions that you asked was Kriyat Shema and the like. Do you say it every, do you say it 32 times a day? Etc. So that was really the big question that people needed to struggle with. And as you can see, if you look here on page 1, you'll see that this was an actual Shiloh. So here, Rav Chaim Tzvi Kaniko, I'm not sure how to pronounce that name. He writes, if you look at the question, he says, "Bim Sheikh Lasi." Well, the name of the Shaila was astronaut Shomaidan Soba Chalalit Echit Nahegim Dine Kriyat Shema Tfila Shabbat Vishari Lo Lechatchila Lensoa. On page 1. Right? On the left hand side. So he says, an astronaut, how does he keep Shabbos, Shema, Davening, all that? And is he allowed to travel? And he says, and he tells you, "Bemshech l'sichatenu atelafonit mehayom, hini bazeh lichtov b'inyan apkisha sheli im Mar Ilan Ramon, shekarego mishtayech lechalalit STS-107, Shalafia Tochnit Shicha Latuz L'Chalal, Ashrim V'Sheva L'Yuni, 2002. So I just finished my conversation. This is my conversation with Don Ramon, who's going up. Ma'od it ba'alti v'rashamti mar Ramon u'bifrat me'abato v'chibato li'adud v'Eretz Yisrael. I was very impressed and by his love of Judaism and of Israel. Husochech iti ve'eled ha'sheila ha'ba'ai lai b'tor ha'rav ha'rishmi shel tchum NASA. Right, he was a rabbi in Florida, so he says he asked me as the official rabbi of NASA. Sure. V'sheilato hi b'nogel hazeh alav lechiot al chalalit b'shabbat ma alav la'asot kedei l'shmor ha'shabbat ulefi eze sha'on alai lalechet kedei ladad zmanei k'nisa v'yitzad shabbat. How do I keep Shabbat? When do I keep Shabbat? Kifi shema sichatenu b'telefon b'tshuvati eilav sipardi lo ha'sipur ha'admor ha'zaken כששאה בלנינגרד ולא היה באפשרות לדעת את זמן השקיעות והוספתי לו שכרגע נראה לו שעליו לסבור 24 שעות זמניות שהרגע בחללית מתחילה לטוס מקייפ קנברל. So he said my first suggestion was that you start counting 24 hours from when you leave Cape Canaveral. He's an American rabbi, okay. I forgive him. I don't know what all the Hebrew words are for any of this stuff. And he's next paragraph, כדוע לך שאלה זאת כבר נידון בעריכות HL comma post gimel shazelifinu dati apamrisha nash shalazuk and shalit lo rakbof and tiareti umma said before. He said there were rabbis who talked about this before it became practical, you know, once people started going up to the moon. But now this is the first time, to the best of my knowledge, that this is an actual practical halachal maisa question. So skipping down, kafisha is kardi marilan, what said ma'odu muchan, lisforas from barba shaot, achum meunyan, lefishon eretz Israel. Lisforatan lefishon eretz Israel. He said, Ilan Ramon was willing to do that, but he didn't like the idea of counting 24 hours from Cape Canaveral. He wanted to know if he could count 24 hours from Israel time, Mufrachu Ezrach Yisrael, because he is a citizen, which in certain areas of Halacha has implications. Makom Shenagu Kifi Devarav. And therefore he wrote this Shaila to other rabbis to get their suggestions. So the main sugya that they weighed in on is the following. And this is, I'll leave you this for Chavrusa, at least to look at the Gemara, is this case that comes up in the bottom here, in Shabbat Daf Samach Tet Amud Bet, where the Gemara has a discussion of what happens if a person is wandering through the desert, right? He was on a caravan, she was in a caravan, and it got lost, and everyone else died, or whatever, and they don't know when Shabbat is. What do you do? And the Gemara deals with this case of what's called the Mahalech Bamidbar, Ve'ene Yodea Imatai Shabbat. What does he do? What does she do? How does he keep Shabbat? And this was the first point of entry that the poskim used to try to understand what you do, is this Gemara. And the other, as I said, is the series of halachic material on people who go to the north where there is no Shabbat. And as you can see, the primary sources they use are here on page 1, 2, and 3. After that, there's a lot of articles. And as you see, on page 4, Rav Gavriel Zinner, who is the author of the Nitei Gavriel, a very prominent Hasidish posek, he was asked by this rabbi in Florida, and he sets out his answer on page 4. Rav Yitzchak Shmuel Shechter lays out his answer on page 5, and then there was an entire kuntres put together, an entire, you know, a whole journal essentially put out called the kuntres em esek shamayim, the kuntres of if I go to heaven, right? Kiyum mitzvot b'chalal, keeping Torah in space. That's, and on page 6, 7, 8, and 9. You see his dealing with this question. Let's break up into Chavrusa. At least try to get through the Gemara and maybe some of the primary sources, and then we'll regroup to look at some of the modern material of what people said on this. Okay, so let's get back to it. Like I said, the Gemara that people start with, which is not an exact parallel, right? The Gemara is not a case where categorically time doesn't work the same way, but it is a case in which you're no longer able to really determine when you keep Shabbos. So the Gemara tells you that if you're in the desert and you don't know when Shabbos is, so the consensus that you keep 1 out of 7 days as Shabbos. The machloket is whether you keep it 1 and 6 or 6 and 1. And what's the argument in the Gemara? So 1 and 6 is
that it could be Shabbos that day.
Well, so everyone agrees you keep 1 of 7. But what's the machloket of 1 then 6 or 6 then 1? So in which time you keep Shabbos?
Yeah.
So good. So if you start with Shabbos, is you mimic the lifetime of Adam, who was born on Friday and therefore experienced Shabbos first, or you follow the creation of the world. Now, why do I do this at all? So Gemara says that here's the rule. Every day of the week, you are allowed to
do work.
You're allowed to do what you need to survive. It's called pikuach nefesh. Right? So that you're allowed to do. But what are you not allowed to do? Any other malacha. Right, that you're not allowed to do. So then the Gemara says, so what does it mean then that I keep Shabbos every seventh day? If you're saying I'm allowed to do pikuach nefesh every day, and I'm not allowed to do any other malacha ever because I don't know what day the real Shabbos is. So the Gemara says, 1 out of every 7 days, you say kiddush and havdalah. That's the only difference. Now, why do you do this? So there are basically two possibilities. One which is accepted lahalacha, one which really isn't. There is a position which emerges from Radbaz and from Yosef Karo and Magen Mei Sharim that in fact you halachically are able to create your own metaphysical Shabbos every seventh day. Rosenzweig likes developing this, but not for now. But the majority position is that, look, Shabbos is whenever it is. And that's why you're not allowed to do malacha on any day. Why are you allowed to do malacha to save your life? Because pikuach nefesh overrides Shabbos. So why do you make kiddush and avdalah once every 7 days? So Rashi says, "Kidei shelo tishtakach mimenu." So Shabbos won't be forgotten, right? You want to in some way mark Shabbos. Now from this Gemara. So not necessarily even on grape juice, just to say, right, the bracha, mekadesh shabbat, and the like, the way maybe we do in davening, whatever you can do, but you're supposed to mark it. But in this Gemara, therefore, you see that at least in this case, the way it's understood by the majority of Rishonim, is that you're supposed to mark Shabbos, but fundamentally, Shabbos is when it is. So you see two values here, right? One is that at least on earth, Shabbos is when it is, but the second is that even in a case when you don't know where Shabbos is, there is some value of marking Shabbos, even if it's not Shabbos, right? Even if it's not Shabbos, but marking it because it is the seventh day. Now, the Rishonim do assume that you're always allowed to travel, right? That's the one malacha you're always allowed to do for obvious reasons, otherwise you're never getting out of there, right? If I said every day, I'm machmir, you'll never get out of there. But that is the fundamental model. So when the poskim started struggling with this question, they said, well, here we have a model, which is, at the very least, we know our conclusion has to be that he must mark Shabbos in some way. Right? That the poskim assumed, is that because it is Shabbos? I don't know. Right? I don't know. And possibly this case mimics a case of safek, right? Being on, right? This is a halachic safek. When do you keep Shabbos on in space? When do you not? So maybe every seventh something he should keep Shabbos in some way. Maybe that's what we learn from the Gemara. And this was really the framing for many of the post. But let's see how their conclusions actually played out. So turn to page 4. Okay, and we'll go through what people actually said. Now, as I said, the halachic model that they based themselves on wasn't just this Gemara, but was the case which has been dealt with in poskim is what do you do when you're in these northern parts of the world where there is no sun or there's no day or no night for 6 months. So if you look at Rav Gabriel Zinner, so he said, what do you do? So he said, what?
Where is
So page 4, right? We're gonna run through it, and I'll summarize some of the visions. So on page 4, so he said, here's what I think. He thinks, if you look at, let's go through the columns. So look at the underline before the first arrow thing, one above that. Nearly, sheyesh limnot sham shivat yamim shavim shel chavdalet shaot shavot shelanu. He said, what I think you do is you count 7 24-hour periods. And this is about the, right, this is the same, he thinks, for the northern, right, the northern parts of the world where you have 6 months of day, 6 months of night, right? What you do is once you count 7 days. And when do you start counting? So he says, Eino shoved el kvi cheshbano asher yatsa misham. You start counting from when you traveled. So he says, Im ken kishonet seb avir b'sfina sheino makom yishuv hu shoved lefi cheshbon sheyatsa misham. So meaning, you leave on a Wednesday, so now you start just treating it as 24 hours, and you just move from there, and a day is always 24 hours, and Shabbat is therefore, right? You know, you leave at whatever.
But we keep Shabbat for 25 hours.
25, but that's because of a chumrah on both sides, so fine. But fundamentally, you calculate the days based on 24-hour periods, and yeah, sure, you'll keep Shabbos 25 hours, based on the time where you leave. And therefore, if you look at the bottom of the right-hand column, and therefore he says, I don't care how many times you go around the earth, right? He says, "Im yarashi akivit kadur haaretz kama pamim bayom afilachi ein lo ela yom echad." So no matter how many times you go around the earth, you keep Shabbos only one every, right, 24 hours or 25 hours out of 168. Right, out of 25 out of 168. How many hours do you have in a week? Oh, I'm sorry. There are 168 hours in a week, right? So 25 out of that, you'll keep Shabbat. Sorry, he says... Yeah. So that's his position on this. He gets into other things, but let's now skip. You know what? Let's skip to page 6, because here's where he sets out the possibilities. Okay, so he says on page 6. Look at where he has the first arrow. He says there's really three possibilities. He said you definitely keep the mitzvot in space, but how do you deal with time mitzvot? So he said here are the possibilities. There are three possibilities. Efsharit rishona. So you see he has subcategories. Possibility one is michad gisa nitan lekvoshi mamash leima legabav hu laachar shecholfot esrim varba shaot. Jimmy Johan as right. He said, possibility one is 24 hours, 12 of which are day, 12 of which are night. Right? That's just what you do. He said, this is a little bit weird because right? He said, that's my first possibility, but I think it's weird. Why is it weird? So he said, first of all, on Earth, days are not perfect 12s and 12s. They're just not. Right? Except for very, very specific parts of the year. And therefore, it would be very strange if in heaven you would dafka do this, right? On earth, it depends on sunrise and sunset, right? And therefore, days are longer and shorter, which tells you that it's not about 12 and 12, it's about sunrise, sunset, which means that in heaven you don't have sunrise and sunset, and therefore he rejects possibility one. He doesn't like this 24-hour thing that Rav Zinner did like, that you just have 24 hours, you treat them as days and nights. He says, I don't know what you're talking about, that's not how the world works. Days and nights are not defined that way, at least not in the 12 and 12. Possibility 2. Mi'idach gizan dan nitan achin lidacheis l'kol pam shemarer makifad kadoretz kima shleima. Possibility 2 is, every time you go around the earth, that is a day. And therefore you have 16 days per 24-hour period. And again, he says, what would the nafka mina be to this? that you would say Kriya Shema 32 times in every 24-hour period, because you have to say it every morning and night, or maybe you'd say Kriya Shema is different. He said maybe you would say you wouldn't say Shema. Why? Because Shema, the pasuk doesn't say day and night. What does it say? The time is really when you're awake and when you're asleep, so maybe that wouldn't apply because you don't sleep and get up 32 times in a day. But he said, I don't understand. And then other nafkamin is, you'd have to put on your tefillin every hour and a half, or whatever it is. And you'd have to daven 48 times in every 24-hour period. Right? What? Correct. And then he says you would have at least two or two and a bit Shabbos per 24-hour period. And you would have Yom Tov, right? A year would finish every 23 days. So every 23 days you would have a period of Pesach and Sukkot. Good luck getting a Sukkah out there and Vechule. And you'd have to sell your chametz on it. And right, all those things that would come. And he says, right?
For Yom Kippur, you just don't eat for like 20 minutes.
Exactly, right? He says... And Shvirda Omer, my God, right? He says, like, you know, you'd have this, right? You'd have like a 2.5 day period where you'd be counting Shvira, right? Right? No. And he says
20 minutes and be like, ah, I'm over.
Right? And he, right? So that's possibility two, possibility three. But look, so possibility three. Look at page 7. Efsherut Shlishit is, and this. He says, "Kayamud efsherut nosevet, possibly three, is she shonem in akodmot, mimikresh amaveret eina makif fad kador aretz, gelav lenhok b'chol eik v'yazmanjur kol makom shulcholif me'elav." Possibly three, he says, is you keep the time of wherever you happen to be passing, right? So, like, you figure out where you're parallel to, right? But he says, now he has the same reaction that you did. He said, "Gam efsherut zu ein esfira kol kach." That's crazy. Shekein lefia yitachein matzav muzar shedakot shuro yuetz lo shabbat. It's ridiculous, right? Like, like you have like 30 seconds of Shabbos and you have to figure it out. He said, and I'm chayev at Kriya Shema for 8 seconds, right? Like, right? He said that's crazy. So therefore, what does he say? So therefore, he says, so look at page 8, he says, this is crazy. He says, therefore, my conclusion is, unlike Rav Zinner, who says the conclusion is that you count 7 days and 24 hours, he said, every possibility is crazy. And therefore, the only conclusion I can come to is, no, that's not what he says. He says that time-bound mitzvot are not applicable. Right? He says, not all mitzvot, but time-bound mitzvot are not applicable. He says, look, he said, look, the closest model we have in halacha for this are the questions about the time in the northern parts of the world. But he says, not really, because there at least time functions. Right? Time functions there. It's just that you don't see the sun. So maybe there you could argue about this. You count 24-hour periods, because there's a meaning to a 24-hour period. So he said, that is possible, but lo kein bechalal, but not in space. Sham chukei abriya v'sidrei hazmanim im shonim lechalutin. Said the world is completely different. Ve'inam kfufim klal amarechet chukei hayom. Well, you don't have day and night. And all things that come from that. He said, even if you made up time, it's not natural. You're making it up yourself, right? You are going around the earth. The earth isn't turning. In what sense is this the same? Shekein sidrei hazmanim shekavat Torah meshutadim ach verak al sidrei masulei ha-maorot biyachas la'adam nisam mekomo b'nei kodor haaretz. Time-bound mitzvot were defined by God based on how human beings on earth relate to the sun and the moon. Right? That's what it is. And therefore, in the next paragraph, he says, Nireh eifo kidevar pashut shilegabei halal ein makom klal adiyun. L'dat kulam ikar adin einam noagim. Sham kol mitzvot dinim chayivim tluyim izmanei yom v'layla. Shavua chodesh v'shana. So the only possible conclusion is that all time-bound mitzvot disappear. They just don't exist. What? All of them. Right? Not all mitzvot, but all time. Shabbat, Kriyat Shema v'yom v'alayla, Tefillin v'yom v'yom, all that. He says, Ki ha-mitzvot halalu nitnu ach v'rak, l'mi shechai b'makom ha-mitnahik l'fi chukei ha-briyah v'zrei zmanim ha-tkeifim al p'nei kador ha-aretz, l'mi shechai b'seder zmanim shoneh l'chalutin. So he says, if that's the case, does that mean you never keep Shabbat? So what do you think his answer is going to be?
You still keep it once a week.
Good, you still keep it once a week? Because as we know from Mahalech Bamidbar, that even when you're keeping Shabbat the whole time, and you have no idea when Shabbat is, acknowledging Shabbat is important because that Gemara teaches you a category, which is Shlo Tishtakach Tarat Shabbat, that when you are, for whatever reason, unable of keeping a mitzvah, especially Shabbat, you have to do something. And therefore he says, V'cholzo mistaber me'od, ki mutal alav l'kayem et kol mitzvot halal midirabanan, kidei shlo tishkach me'en et torat mitzvot elu. And he extrapolates from that, and he says, it's not just true of Shabbat. He said, Meikar Adin, you're not obligated in anything. But we learn from that it's not only about Shabbat, but the same thing is true of Shema and Tefillah, and therefore what he says is, look, technically, you are exempt from all mitzvot that are time-bound when you're in heaven. But what you should do is...
But you're saying in heaven, though.
What? In space, right? Sorry. He says, therefore, what you should do is count 24 hours, 7 24 hours, and keep Shabbat, and don't do melacha, and make Kiddush and Havdalah, and daven Shabbat davening on those. And the rest, he says, you should try to keep the other mitzvot, say Shema twice every 24-hour period. And you should, if you were there for a year, then you should try to keep Yom Tov when it would be, and the like. And the reason he says is, again, because you learn from this from the principle of the Gemara, of Mahalech Bamidbar, that when you're in a situation where you can't keep the mitzvah because you don't know the time, that you should try to mimic it. And therefore, he argues that fundamentally you are not obligated, but you should mimic it. So what you see is basically the following, right? You have, let's say, Rav Zinner, who says that he doesn't buy this. He says all mitzvot apply even in space. It's just hard to figure out when it is. So he says, okay, so it's the same as in the northern parts of the world. And he says what you do is you count 24-hour periods, you make up time, you figure it out that way. The author of this, Ezek Lishmaya, right, he says, I don't think that's true. He thinks that categorically, every possibility runs into so many problems, that it must be that fundamentally, not the extreme position we saw originally, that mitzvot don't apply in heaven, but time-bound mitzvot don't apply because time isn't normal. And therefore, but he says, what you learn from the halacha of Mahalech Bamidbar is that even when you aren't really keeping this man mitzvot, let me just finish my sentence.
Yeah.
What you should do is, right, you should always have a nod to it so you don't forget it. And therefore for Shabbat, he agrees the halacha that you should keep Shabbat every seventh day, but not really, right? You're not really obligated. It's just that you want a commemoration of it. So you do Kiddush and Avdallah, and you should say Shema twice a day and the like, because he takes that as the paradigm. Not just for Shabbat, for all time-bound mitzvah, that even in a case when they don't apply, which is in the end of the day his conclusion, because he doesn't like all the other options, you should at least keep this as a commemoration. And then he goes to a lot of others. He said, let's say you would have a baby in space. So Pidyon HaBen, he thinks you would do after 30, 24-hour periods. Right? He goes through other manifestations of this. He says, tzitzis, he thinks would apply, because the Ashkenazi position at least is that it matters not whether it's day or night, but whether you're wearing day clothes or night clothes. So that, obviously, if you're wearing your normal clothes, it could be obligatory. But fundamentally, that is his position, as opposed to, let's say, Rav Zinner, who really thinks that the mitzvah would apply. It's just a question of figuring out when it is. He takes the 24-hour approach, but you could have taken all the other approaches in the that are suggested. Yeah.
So you said earlier that this guy who went to space, decision based on Israeli time, which means that how would the opinion that, like, of keeping it on Earth, right?
Right, right. Or so he ended up taking the Israeli one. That was what he ended up doing. Yeah. Correct. So it could be as Lo Shabbat Torah Shabbat. Right. Now the Posseg who argued to him says, no, really, you're supposed to count. The only reason he said it, you could do it from Israel was, look, even if you think that every seventh day, you don't have to buy what Rav Zinner said, which was you have to keep it based on where you left. It could just be that, look, once you're in space, right, it doesn't really matter where you left from, right? That's going to become irrelevant within seconds. And therefore, it's legitimate for you to say that I'll keep it every seventh day, but I'll base it on Israel. Right? That was basically his argument for that. Rav Yitzchak Shmuel Schechter, had argued where he also thinks that you only keep it as a zecher be'alma or midrabanan, and the light, at least in the context of tefillah. Okay. So let's, like I said, it's an interesting read if you read through all the different possibilities, but those are basically the positions that were raised. Either that he really has to keep Shabbat, and then, you know, some version of every 24 hours from where he left, maybe from Israel. And others who said, no, fundamentally, time-bound mitzvah don't apply, because all the possibilities are crazy, right? 7 hours of 12 and 12-hour, 24-hour days, which doesn't make sense. Or saying that the day happens 16 times every 24-hour period, which doesn't make sense. And none of those did he really buy. And therefore, he said it's only a zecher. But what you learn from the sugya of Mahalich Bamidbar is that you, what's it called? From the sugya of Mahalich Bamidbar, you at least need to have a commemoration. And then he extrapolates from that to all mitzvot. Okay, so let us throw out just some of the other halachic issues that that came up. Kiddush Levana. So the postgame had suggested to him that you are indeed allowed to in the Etzek Shemaya, he thought you could make Kiddush Levana. He thought that he dealt with other questions. Bris Mila, he thought you would count 8 24-hour periods.
Could you have a mikvah in space?
You could, I guess, if you could get the water up there, yeah. The water, which is not, you know, Mayim Shuvin, so have it rain. I don't know how you'd do that. I don't know if you could do it practically, but theoretically.
Bring a small thing of rain. Isn't there a thing where you, like, have it?
Yeah, but no, you need at least 40 saw of it. Oh. So I don't know exactly how you would do it. And it can't have been put in a clay, so I don't really know how you would do it, but maybe.
Then you can.
Now, there were other things that came up. There were poskim who said you can't go up because it's dangerous. Fine. Okay.
That's
Mishnah Halachot said that. Some of the poskim were opposed, and this is a sugya I don't think we have time to get into, which was this second sugya from the Goren Shabbat Yotet, which was this of Ein Mafligin Beyam, is that you're not supposed to go on a trip within 3 days of Shabbat, if you're going to have to be Mechal Shabbos when you're there. So some of the poskim had opposed it didn't love it for that reason. In general, there's huge machlokot, but there's definitely room to be makil, because we think that once you leave 3 days before Shabbat, so you leave at the beginning of the week. Again, but that's really a big sugya, which I don't think we have time to get into. The sefer at the end, Birchat Levana, he suggests that you would not say Kiddush Levana on the moon, because the bracha is made on seeing the waxing and waning of the moon. But when you're on the moon, it doesn't wax or wane, and therefore the experience. What?
Wasn't gonna...
No, I know, but the theoretical question. Yes, I don't know if there would be a bracha for that. Now, there were some poskim who thought that hashkafically it was wrong to do this. Like I said, the other big halacha we can't really get into. The The Kiddush from a straw question, if you were interested in that, was on page 11 and 12, which is really a question to really formulate that. But this was, again, the survey of it. But I think it's an interesting sort of meta question, which is really, right, is it possible that there are places where either halacha doesn't apply at all, or certain categories of halacha don't apply at all, whereas you see, there are some poskim who really entertain that, either in its fullest form, or at least for zmanim, and others who couldn't believe it, and therefore had to deal with the practicalities of, okay, well, how do you define it? And within that, you saw that it's quite complicated, right, at 16 days per 24-hour period, or randomly assigning 24-hour periods of 12 hours and 12 hours, which doesn't really make sense. And there's a lot of problems in that.
What if people, if all of Earth colonized another planet?
So again, then I think the postman would have to revisit and really try to figure it out again.
Would you follow things by Earth time, or would you?
I don't know, right? It really depends on this. Okay, let's stop it there. But I think at least we've seen the basic approaches that were taken. Again, for me, this is not halachah l'maaseh. No one's asking me this, Shaila. But as you see, as strange as this question is, at least most of the tshuvot we've seen today were in fact halachah l'maaseh questions that were asked by Ilan Ramon. So it is possible that these are practical. Obviously, like I said, some of the principles here are relevant for the how you keep Shabbos when you go to Nunavut or whatever northern parts of Norway and the like. Though there are certain distinctions. Anyways, I think it's an interesting topic. I wouldn't have looked at it if I guess Summer hadn't, whoever it was who asked. But I think it was Summer, but I'm not sure. But now at least it was interesting as a thought experiment. Think about a topic that you want to do next time, which is not for 2 weeks, and let me know, because Eilat. Right, you're in Eilat next week. So let me know, if you think of something, you can email me or text or WhatsApp me. Otherwise, I'll come up with something. Anyway, this is the introduction to this topic, and like I said, if you go online to the Olamot website, there is there's the introduction piece where they'll have a summary of all the Makarot if you want to look at some of the issues in depth that we didn't touch. Okay.